Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksurundritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati sa padantikam pancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu patitan pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So we're in a change of room. Myself, just by my nature, whenever I come to a class, I always like to have a unnoticed escape exit, but we don't have one now. But some people do have to leave early. I know one person at least told me, and of course, go to the bathroom. I think we went straight through, like Cybele recommended that, no break. I'll blame it on you. We'll go straight through, and you know, people have to go to the bathroom, then just, you know, we'll mark the timing of the thing, and it's posted online. Lucy posted a thing online on the Facebook page. You should really see it. It's called Chitra Kavitwani, and I kept on alluding to it in class. It's an amazing thing. It's Rupa Goswami's his poetical exercises, and you'll see a mastery. This is the author of the book we're studying. You'll see a mastery of wordcraft that you've never, ever seen. It's almost inconceivable what he does. He composes, they give exercises, and only a few people in the world in centuries can do this. They'll give an exercise with one consonant, and with one consonant, you have to make a poem about Krishna's pastimes. So you really get expert in poetry because you're limited what you can do. The word you have to choose has to have a rhyme, it has to have a meaning, meter has to fit in. So to actually do poetry, it really takes a mastery of wordcraft. So he just increases it, one syllable, a pastime of Krishna, and then put a poem of Krishna. Madhav, you have to watch this. It's on the thing. You have to see this. You'll really appreciate it. A poem of Krishna. And it reads exactly the same frontwards and backwards. But then he does things where it also reads this way and around. And then sometimes they discovered, which even people hadn't discovered, that sometimes he had patterns to write his name, like in a circle. So it's really good. There's a book. I brought a few copies from India because the people who do it are well known to me. Because out in Govardhan, where I have a place where I stay for part of the year, there's a Sanskrit school, and I used to give the Bhagavatam class there and be a mentor to some of these young people, and amazing. So if you look at that, the last class in June, the date was changed because I realized I'm not back. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be the weekend after Atyasha, like the 17th or the 16th of June. The last class will be there in the last three verses. And, okay, and we'll go. Let's, the next verse, you can just, oh, we're there, okay, that's it. We can repeat it responsively. Atyaharas payashascha. Prajalpo Niyamagraha.
Prajalpo Niyamagraha.
Janasangas chaloliam cha. Shadbir bhaktir vinasyati. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities: eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically, associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness, and being greedy for mundane achievements. Just go back. You have the bands? Anybody last a day? What? What? What's that?
She lost it.
You're so pure that you lost it. But we're going to do it this week. I think every week we'll do it on one of the exercises in the verse. But it's good. It's just a great way to be mindful, because we describe vacho vegam, controlling the urge to speak, was one of the items last week. And it's so good. It's so helpful because you're mindful of it. And what mindfulness does, it brings a response from your mind, or the manas, which is impulsive reaction. There's a part of your overall mind called the citta, but the division of the mind where it reacts to things according to past experience, not according to judgment based on knowledge. So according to our impulse, we just love to talk about others. We just love to criticize. And when you do something that's not dharmic, it degrades your mind. And it brings it to a lower level of perception and contentment. So when you do something properly, it elevates the mind to a higher level of perception and contentment. So it's so good. Like, the impulse is there based on these bad thoughts that you've accumulated by reinforcing bad things for so long. And it goes to the booty, right? Because if you criticize, then you have to switch the thing. And it says if you can keep it for 3 weeks, you'll change your habit. Because what will happen is, by resisting it, you'll be doing something good. It'll elevate your mind to a higher level of perception and contentment, and you'll start to like not doing that bad habit. And then after 3 weeks, there'll be enough aklishtavritti, good thoughts, that your habit will change. And again, this is just Yoga Sutra. When you don't fill your desire that's no good, then the samskaras, the impressions, the attractions begin to close. So after 3 weeks, enough have closed and good ones have been created. So it's just a good way. And just getting back to put everything in context, I want to review the last verse briefly, but to put everything in context, I gave a vision last week of why you're here and the fortune of sitting and listening to Shastra. And when I gave the term abhava, abhava means non-existence. So there's certain things that are non-existent forever that end. And one of them is a lack of knowledge or ignorance. Forever, practically, we can't even trace it since time immemorial. We've been in ignorance and therefore suffering. And then I gave this image that at a particular time, God chooses to help you end that, and he sends sadhu sangha, which means people who are versed in sacred texts and can communicate them to you. And it's a very, very significant moment in this unlimited, and I'll quote the Sanskrit, and I like to use the hand too, Brahmanda Brahmate, Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai. You're wandering from universe to universe, species of life, until somehow or other, by the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of Guru, the mercy of the teachers, they decide to give you the right idea when you are open to that idea. And what God had to do to make you open to that idea. It's the whole show of the material world to make you open to that idea. And that idea is basically that happiness is to be who you are, which is a devotee of God. That happiness is to serve rather than control and enjoy. And that's basically the theme of devotional practices. Choosing to serve rather than to control and enjoy, disconnected from service. And control and enjoy also means to be peaceful in this world, and therefore you have kind of a quota of that. There's a certain enjoyment that's required to live. In fact, I have one quote to enliven you today. This type of material enjoyment is compulsive for the soul. Without enjoying the senses, a living entity cannot survive. So there is enjoyment that's required, but connected to keeping the body and soul together for the purpose of Krishna consciousness. So when you get this kind of impression that you want to serve, which means I want my life to be guided not just by my desires, but what is right. And therefore I'm willing to accept authority, which has a bad, we talk this with such a reason, sometimes English words get a bad name. But it means truth. Authority means truth. When we're ready to guide our lives by truth, rather than just our whims, and we like that, and somehow we're set up for that. And then the first verse was describing the basic impulses that you have to control to move forward in Krishna consciousness. To actually become qualified. You can become, the first verse said you can become qualified, and it said guru, not as like this position which gets a lot of flowers on their Vyas Puja, and everybody's stuffing them with food. Not that, but you can become guru, which means the topmost servant. You can become qualified. You can be filled with love if you do these things. So let's proceed. Okay, now the second verse, you know, I've been introducing you to what I feel. The main commentary that we're using is the Nectar of Instruction. I read it this morning again, the verse. It's Prabhupada has such depth of realization. So to read it and touch your heart, it's so important. But I use some other commentary. This is Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj. He's one of Prabhupada's godbrothers. He was a great Vaishnav scholar. In fact, when he lived with Prabhupada for a while. And this, I just realized, this is another great book. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is the father of Prabhupada's guru. And a guru in our line, and he wrote a commentary just on the first two verses. And it's very, very powerful also, just on the first two verses. I was going crazy preparing for this. I'm just like reading, and you know, there's a time we have to say, like, enough, enough, you got it, you know? It's like an overkill already. There's a Bengali statement, don't try to kill a mosquito with a shotgun. So I was Now, from this book, look what he says about this verse. He says, but it is most important to consider the deep meaning of this verse. For anyone who wants to engage in devotional service, in pure devotional service, it is especially necessary to follow the instructions of this verse. For one who neglects to follow these instructions, devotion to Lord Hari is rare. We are hereby elaborating the meaning of the verse for the benefit of those who have a strong desire to attain pure devotional service. We should all want to become pure. And when we're pure, what's my favorite quote from Prabhupada, Gail? You must have heard it a million times. Yes. Yes. The perfected state of the living entity is called a devotee. When you remove everything else that's external to the self, you're just left with someone with consciousness that just wants to serve. The perfected state. And that is happiness. Because the essence of God's pleasure potency is called the Ladini Shakti. Ladini Shakti. God's pleasure potency is called the Ladini Shakti. And the essence of the Ladini Shakti is love of Godhead. And that type of pleasure is not just mental. It's actually real. It's an energy. All other pleasures are at best a reflection of that into the world, but generally more or less mental considerations, and therefore they're better in the expectation than the reality. And then when you get them and you engage in them, then they start to dwell, because it's all the mental consideration, the fantasies. But this is real pleasure. So he says, if you want this real pleasure, if you want this real pleasure, then you go for this. Hare Krishna, welcome, Sophie. So that's a good introduction, right? It's kind of spiritual and coaching. Okay, next verse there. Okay. I'm just saying what my strategy is. You want to come in and sit on a chair or something? Please, Sophie. Go ahead. Yeah, just go. It's not the other place had better logistics, so I'm a logistics freak. But due to, studying Krishna consciousness, you can see there, or you want a chair, Sophia? You sure? There's plenty of chairs. Okay, I was explaining, I am a logistics freak, but due to my Krishna consciousness, even though this is harder to organize the way I want, I'm just being detached and going with the flow. So I'm advancing in spiritual life. So this is the class, my strategy, obviously. Prabhupada's scholarship was very, very unique because, and I'll tell you something, I would watch Prabhupada write the books, because when I came to Vrindavan in 1975, the ashram was in the guest house, the ISKCON guest house. There was nobody there. We couldn't fill up any rooms. So they used the guest house. I had a room on the top floor. And when I'd wake up, and I always wake up early, I would wake up at 2, and I'd look out the window, and Prabhupada was on his porch translating. I could watch him from my window. And he had a dictaphone, and he had a Bhagavatam that had 16 commentaries. So he would read the verse. This is how he wrote his books. He would read the verse, then look at all the commentaries, and then he would just speak. So it's different from writing, because writing, you edit, you put things in order, you don't repeat things. So this is the same way he did this book. So it's not exactly in order. It's not discuss this one, that one, this one. So I put it in order. It's kind of from his heart. And he combines, they're all connected, and So I'm putting them one by one for this class, and that's my idea. And then, of course, at the end, we'll have some reflection and sharing. It should be practical. I'm actually getting good feedback from the class that some of the points that have been made have really hit people in the heart, and they're really meditating. And there's something called sadhu sarg called friction with the sadhu. Because sometimes spiritual ideas and what we want are in conflict. So it's good. It's good. At the beginning, there's no conflict. Beginning, there's no conflict, but we just go to the temple, we take prasad, and we leave. But then when you go, oh, this is a philosophy, I have to advance, you know, maybe I have some objectives here, wow, this is the truth, then it's not that I'm enjoying that, I was trying to give an example how there was friction, but probably I was enjoying it too. Okay, and then I thought a reflection at the end. Which obstacle to devotion are you most guilty of having? If you changed it, how would your life look? When we discuss them, you'll see. Okay? Me too, Julie, all of them. Okay. Now, Atyahara. Okay? And, okay. Yeah, Atyahara. Atya, it comes from a word, ati. Ati means a lot. Like the greatest warriors are called atiratis. There's maharatis, they can fight with 1,000 people. Atiratis, they can fight with unlimited people. And hara means eating. So atyahara means the desire for unlimited eating. But it was already covered in the last verse, which said vachu vegam. So the commentators say it doesn't refer to that. It just refers to all the senses and accumulating things for the senses. So Prabhupada says the problem. In the material world, one has to work for the maintenance of the body and soul. But how can one perform such work in a way that is favorable for the execution of Krishna consciousness? Now, for those of you that looked at the book, Prabhupada goes into something, it's inspiration, he goes into something almost completely different, it seems. And he starts to discuss God's energies. He starts to discover that God has, and I'm looking at it myself this week, why is Prabhupada discussing that there's three energies? And the energies are, there's the spiritual energy, there's the material energy, and there's the marginal energy. We are tatastha shakti, and this is one theme we'll discuss. Tatastha shakti means tata is the shoreline. So tata is the shoreline. It means it's neither water nor land. So we are tatastha shakti. We're the marginal potency, and we're not in the spiritual, we're not in the material. We can be, as the shore can either be in the water or the land, we can either be in the material or the spiritual energy. And the spiritual energy is it facilitates the desire to be the soul, to serve. And the material energy facilitates the desire to enjoy and control. So this is, and as Vaisheshika Prabhu said, a very nice devotee, he'll be here too, I think in the beginning of June, he said, basically God has created us open for suggestions. And there's these different suggestions going on. So what it says here is, kind of, we already are within the material energy, and that forces us, we have to work to maintain ourselves. So the question is how to do it for the soul. It's very, very tricky because we're in the body. So actually, how to do it for the soul. And And here, the point is raised, since maintaining one's life is not possible without acting, one must work to maintain his life. If such activities are done in enjoyment, then one's qualification as a human is lost, and one is no better than an animal. Because Prabhupada would say, what is an animal? It's just the material energy. Ah! It's just eating, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It's just those four activities. So human life means to how to check those things and choose the soul, choose to serve. So it's a very, very kind of subtle thing. And then, I quoted this, this type of material enjoyment is compulsive for the embodied soul. Without joy, enjoying the senses, living entity cannot survive. So we're embodied and we have to deal with this. And because we have to enjoy, we have to work. And we have to maintain this thing. So the question is now how to do it. And that's the problem. So that it doesn't reinforce the false ego, which is the source of all the problems. The false ego, which means the desire to control and enjoy. Otherwise, even death doesn't exist for someone who's free from false ego. It doesn't exist. I told you that story of this very saintly lady I knew, God's sister, who was dying in Vrindavan, and she was incredible. Very cultured lady, very deep spiritually, really had such a spiritual objective. And she was cured from stage 4 cancer and went out again to distribute Prabhupada's books and give knowledge for this purpose, because people are suffering due to ignorance. So she said, I have to give. She left. And then after she came back, and she's on the floor in Vrindavan, I come in the room. And we're chanting like mad. There's no call and response. When someone's leaving the world, there's no call and response. There's only call and call and call. I was there when Prabhupada left. And you know who was on the bed singing when Prabhupada left? Anybody guess? Gauravani's father. You ever saw the cover of the Bhagavad Gita? That was painted by Gauravani's father. He was one of the premier, of course, he has a stepfather now, but his birth father, and he was singing. No, just chanting your heart. We were chanting our hearts out. And then that same, so mystical Vrindavan, the same Ayurvedic doctor walks in that cured her. So mystical at the time, too. It was a little bit during the summer, a little hazy, and came and felt her pulse and said, disease is finished. You have 1 hour left to live. And then, you know, I just thought about it later, because he was so evolved, this Ayurvedic doctor was so evolved, then what happened is he understood that this lady was liberated. So she had no longer had any other desire but to serve God. So therefore there was no attachment to the body anymore. And it's only attachment to the body that you suffer. So she was finished. So the transformations of the body, which are called vikara, we don't, you know, the suffering is identification. It's like the child wants to enjoy the moon and the mother gives the child a pot of water and the child thinks he has the moon, but it's heavy and he starts shaking. So he becomes nervous. He thinks that the moon is shaking, but the moon is not shaking. It's just because he thinks the moon is in the pot. So we're shaking, but we're not actually shaking. We're not actually born, grown, maintained, reproduced, dwindle and die. It's not actually happening to us. But we're feeling it because due to the false ego, the desire to enjoy separate from God, the desire not to be a devotee, but rather to be the center rather than serve the center, then our consciousness has become reflected on this body. So the Ayurvedic science, disease is finished. You've really finished your disease. Because it's all the false conception of life. So now I have a question for the women. Okay? And it's going to be a very challenging question. And it's going to be answered within the class. Okay? When you go shopping in Loy Bazaar, if you haven't been to Vrindavan yet, you're all welcome. Myself, Jai Shirade, she helps me, will host you in Vrindavan. But there's a bazaar that has all beautiful, you know, everything for Krishna consciousness and yourself. So the question is, when you go to Loy Bazaar to shop, do you do it for your ego or for your soul? Well, you gave the right answer. You do it for your ego, for your soul. But we'll talk. Do you do it for your ego or you do it for your soul? And here's another question. How come the men don't go shopping as much as the women? I'm writing it. If you're reading my articles, I'm putting out one every month.
They have less options.
What?
Okay.
What? What's
sure
that?
We're more advanced.
Wow, this class is having a lot of fun. Gopki, sure, I'm just going to tell you one thing. You live in New Jersey where the ladies rule. And you're in trouble, I'll tell you that too. I love having the feasts in Jersey. All the men are cooking and serving, and the ladies sit at this nice picnic table. It's kind of like a nice Von Ashram system. It works. And if you want to come to one of the functions, you're welcome. You'll see how it works. Okay. So, next verse. Okay, so here's the solution. Human life is meant for plain living and high thinking. Everyone requires possessions such as food, grains, clothing, money, and other things necessary for the maintenance of the body, but one should not collect more than necessary for his actual basic needs. If this natural principle is followed, there will be no difficulty in maintaining the body. In Yoga Sutras, this is the principle of santosh. It's enough. And the more you come to that platform, within your reasonable needs, we do have reasonable needs, the more the problems of life get naturally solved. But what I want to do now is discuss this over collecting, this hoarding, this amassing of wealth, that type of consciousness, and why it's so destructive to Krishna consciousness. Ruti, if you can just skip to slide 8 by amassing money. I feel like even, okay, yeah, that's good. So in terms of the ego, what effect will Atyahara have, over-collecting? What will it have? Just keeping and more and more and more and more and more. What will it have? What is the effect?
Well, the more you have.
What's that?
The more you have, the more you're attached to what you have, and the more you buy into that it's your happiness.
Yeah, well, one thing is, the more you collect, the more attached you get. Eric Fromm, I guess, you know, sociologist, said the real freedom is not freedom to, but freedom from. The freedom from want. But what else here, what it says in this verse? Because what is the ego? The ego is the desire to enjoy and control. And for the desire to control and enjoy, you want power. And one power is things and money. Right? Jumpuck?
Fear to lose it all.
What?
The fear to lose everything.
Fears, too. Yeah, you get so fearful, too. I say, like, wow, what a problem Bill Gates has. You ain't got nothing. You ain't got nothing to lose. But what happens is your attachments increase. Your attachments increase, and your desires increase, and it creates a desire for more and more and more power. More and more power. And then what happens is you have to exploit, because you have to get the things that other people have. And the thing is, this principle never ends. Sophia, I can't use your example, could I? I just, or not? Okay. I'll just tell you, it's just an interesting story. She'll be embarrassed, but I was talking to her that somehow, I don't know how she got into this trouble, but she married a billionaire. And this is, it's such an interesting history, but what happened is when communism went down, I was talking to her about it because I was thinking of this and what she was telling me. When communism went down, then a group of people that were business people, you know, they exploited the country and they started to make a lot of money. So they had a person, Yeltsin, who was favorable to this. And then they were afraid when he goes, then the next person wouldn't be favorable. So they put in Putin in power. But, you know, and then he got rid of them because it's this way the whole thing. But what I was amazed is discussing what these people were doing is, you can just see, they were funding wars and selling arms. Right? It just doesn't end, right? And not only funding arms, but who were they funding? Muslim terrorists. And they were Jewish. So I just thought, like, yes, this is the way the world works. Once you get into that cycle, you can look at yourself on a smaller, we're all affected. I'm also a sannyasi. I just got a nice gift from Russia. Someone sent me a new designer, something or other. And then now I have three charters and, you know, it never ends. Now I'm attached to them all. What can I do? <I'm> just... But the thing is, it just never ends. It never ends. And that's what's happening in the world. And Prabhupada's commentary on this is really so interesting. I'm just going to read it, what he says. Prabhupada says,
somehow I have the wrong, I think I'll find it.
Yeah. The wealth of the world... This is on page 24 at the very end, and it goes on to 25. But the wealth of the world should be used for the welfare of all living entities, for that is the plan of nature. Everyone has the right to live by utilizing the wealth of the Lord. When people learn the art of scientifically utilizing the Lord's property, they will no longer encroach upon one another's rights. It's actually not the verse that I wanted. Let me see if I can find it. Anyway, there was some... I can't find it now. I'm just not going to... But forget that. We'll just look up for a second. So, you know, this is what happens. Here, this is what Prabhupada said. According to scripture, this collecting more than necessary is prohibited. Now the entire world is suffering because of it. Right? 1% of the world. I just read the Waltons have more money than 40% of the people in America. And, you know, it just goes on and on. And you know, people are suffering in so many ways. It's all because of this. And we may not be demons like this, but that propensity in us, it just increases our attachment. It increases our exploitation. Even in the Yoga Sutras, it says desire leads to violence. Because when you get too many attachments, then envy comes and conflict comes, etc. And the opposite of this is when you live within your means, and we're going to discuss that next so you don't get so depressed. When you're going to live within your means, what happens is, what's the good thing that happens is, you learn dependence on God. You know, you see how he's actually maintaining. In days of yore, the traditional sannyasis, when they would take sannyas, they would go to the forest with nothing. And when they would go to the forest with nothing, what would happen is that, you know, where would they eat? You know, where would they get protection? But everything would happen. So they would start to see God's grace in the world. And it's so important to see God's grace in the world. It's so important to see that because we have to see it at death. Otherwise, it's too frightening. We have to be convinced of that. That God is protecting us. God is maintaining us. So this is the principle. Okay, Rati, go back to principle satisfying, you know, kamesyanendriya pritir. Yeah. So this is a very beautiful verse in the Bhagavatam because it's very, very practical. You know, because also in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, maybe I read it too. This is one more thing to say. All these instructions have two different types of applications for the householders and the renunciates. Householders can collect in order to maintain their family members. They should earn their livelihood and save according to religious principle. With this savings, they should serve the Lord, the devotees, guests, family members, and themselves. If a householder collects more than his requirement, then there is impediment in his devotional service and achieving the Lord's mercy. So, you know, there is differences. But I want to explain this verse, and it's very, very, very beautiful. In the Bhagavatam, it's the very beginning. There's the verse that says, Dharmasya yapavargasya. It says that Dharma is meant for liberation. That's why we do Dharma. That's why we do religion. It's not meant for sense gratification. It's meant for liberation. So then the question comes in the mind, then what about sense enjoyment? Basically, you know, it's kind of like, come on, give me a break. Throw me a few crumbs, you know. This philosophy is too heavy for me. You know, what about myself? So this says, it's very, very beautiful. It says, kamesya nendriya pritir. We have to have enjoyment, and we should have enjoyment, but the purpose is not enjoyment. That's not the goal. You can have enjoyment, but the purpose is not enjoyment. Labho jivete yavata. You should take what you need. Right? You should take what you need. Jivasya tatva jigasa, to be peaceful, to realize the absolute truth. In other words, the important thing is the right objective. and then you take what you need. And that's nothing else should be the goal of one's work. My friend Borijan Prabhu, who's a wonderful scholar, commenting on this verse, says, we should not live to eat. We should eat to live. We should not live to enjoy. We should enjoy to live. So we take what we need. And I'll give you an interesting example of this. About 20 years ago in Vrindavan, I met this lady from the Upper West Side. It was in a jewelry shop searching for deities. And she was from Argentina. Call out to Fabian in the back there. She was from Argentina. She was from Argentina and, you know, obviously from a higher class of people. And she had this incredible attachment to Radha and Krishna deities. So somehow I met her, and she lived on the Upper West Side. And, you know, I used to visit her, and we used to have programs at her house. And she was very, very sincere, like really sincere. So she got really kind of fired up about Krishna consciousness. And I'll never forget the look on the face of those New York lawyers when they came to her apartment as she was sitting with this Hare Krishna and signing over all her wealth as the executor for charities of education and food distribution in ISKCON. But she's signing over everything. You know, everything. And I remember going down to the bank with her and, you know, making a duplicate key for her safety deposit box. She was giving everything. But she was always very finely dressed. Because she was from a certain type of culture. She was a woman. And this is what she needed to live. I also give it another example. This particular, you know, Bhakti Center wasn't here. We just had 22nd Avenue, and we had a little ashram on East 4th Street. It's like a two-bedroom apartment. Mm-hmm. And Gadadhar was there, and I was visiting at the beginning, and there was a few other people. Ganesham, there's a few people there at the beginning. And then later, after moving to Avenue D, then we got this. But, even before that, we were in Brooklyn, and we wanted to preach in Manhattan. So these two ladies moved into Manhattan and did the preaching at 22nd Avenue. And they were very special people, very philosophical, really meant for God. And but they came, you know, initially from that hardcore type scene. So there was a marriage at 22nd Avenue. There was a marriage at 22nd Avenue. And I remember it. It was so interesting because the guy that was getting married to the girl, you know, he was wearing a charter and bare-chested. But at a particular time, he had to cover the lady's head, right? And then I remember, like, you know, the charter goes up and you can see what's on his chest and you saw his tattoo. I defy you. But the lady was kind of a little bit gannic and she didn't want to dress up for her wedding. But there was a senior disciple of Prabhupada here, Mother Jagatarini, a very special lady. If you ever go to Vrindavan to these retreats, she's an incredible lady. And, you know, she was like her mentor. She said, no, you have to dress beautiful. You know, you have to dress beautiful for your husband and so many things. So there's a little subtlety here that we do have needs. You know, we do have needs. I'll tell you one other story, but I'm keeping my eye on the clock. But I just think is this is, you know, one time I was, I know there were two or three people, and we were running ISKCON Vrindavan. We were the people that were running the place. And then there was a new administration. But more or less, it was like a coup d'etat of the previous administration, whole thing. It was almost like a military takeover, right? These things happen in institutions sometimes. So they wanted me on their side. They already got rid of the other guy, but the people, they wanted me on their side. So what they did is they were really like, they had a militant view of Krishna consciousness. They'd like to buy big palaces and these things. And they were conquering different places and they were becoming in charge. It was wild. They came out just like a simple, this is like the nicest I've ever dressed in my life. But I just came back from India, so I got new clothes. So they wanted, you know, I was a simple guy in Vrindavan. I didn't have anything. I didn't have a penny to my name, you know, whatever. So they wanted me because I was one of the leaders there on their site. So they gave me their uniform. Yeah, you're looking, what's the uniform? Pair of Birkenstock shoes, a Samsonite briefcase, and a Rolex watch. So I had this Rolex watch. This is the second nicest watch I ever had in my life. It was given to me as a birthday gift by Nikki. Okay? So, and it has a little saffron so I can wear it. So what happened is I had this Rolex watch, right? So I was visiting this sadhu in Vrindavan, who I sometimes would study with, a very nice sadhu. So I asked him this question, what is yukta vairagya? Yukta vairagya means balanced detachment. If we give up everything, our hearts will become cold. So the things we're attached, we can use in Krishna's service as much as you need. So I remember I just walked in there. You could have had music in the background, kind of like dun 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 dun. And then I said, yeah, I said, what is this yukta vairagya? He said, like you need a watch, 100 rupees. And I went like this. So so yukta vairagya. So that's nice. Okay, Rati, the next verse. Wow. Just before I get this is santosh. This is contentment. Another reason, contentment is the highest happiness. When you come to the soul, that's where real pleasure is. It's consciousness, it's not things. And the more things you accrue, the more you become attached to the fact that happiness is things and not consciousness. So, this is Vyas, his comment. He's the main commentator on Yoga Sutras. Whatever happiness there may be in the celestial world, they do not amount to 1/16 of the happiness attained by the cessation of desires. When you actually come into the soul. Of course, this is more gyanic than bhakti. But these are some things that you could read and were listed, and Prabhupada gave different examples. But the other thing, too, is to focus your mind. Hoarding is in the mode of passion. It's also sinful to keep so much when others are starving, when others don't have clothes, when others... So there's, you know, it had... In other words, it tempered, and it's tempered according to people and how they were born and what they were used to and what their needs is and even what their genders are and so many other factors. But the principle is there. So hoarding, it's also so distracting. It's so distracting. And, of course, amassing wealth, same thing. But it's, you know, there's a principle of it. Rupa Goswami, who wrote the book, He was a millionaire before he became in Krishna consciousness. He was very wealthy because he was the home minister of a country of Bengal and Orissa. He was the home minister. So he was very, very, very wealthy. And so when he left, and he came to Krishna consciousness, be a renunciate, he actually had that realization. He divided, he gave half his wealth, he gave in charity, one quarter he gave to his family, and one quarter he saved for emergency. So there are practical divisions of these things too. And also, over-collecting can also mean knowledge that's not connected to spiritual upliftment. You know, like I can see it, books and so many things. And Prabhupada discusses also acceptance of religion for mundane prosperity. You know, maybe I can find that because I think it's so nice where Prabhupada discusses that. He discusses what really that in religion, I just picked up another thing. Modern warfare waged between capitalists and communists is due to their avoiding the advice of Rupa Goswami regarding Atyahara. It's all people collecting. They want other countries, other things. Bhakti Siddhanta writes in his Anuvrit commentary, do we need a little air in this room or you're all okay? Okay, we'll put a little more air in the room. Just a little bit up. Right, because it's a little stuffy. Maybe today I will maybe even gave a break. I'll see how much I cover just to, because this room is a little stuffier and it's something for 2.5 hours to keep people's attention. it takes a lot of it, you know. Bhakti Siddhanta writes as an Anuvrit commentary that too much endeavor to acquire knowledge on part of mental speculators or dry philosophers falls within the category of atyahara, collecting more than needed. According to the Bhagavatam, the endeavor of philosophical speculators to write volumes of books on dry philosophy devoid of Krishna consciousness is entirely futile. The work of karmis who write volumes of book on economic development also falls within the category of atyahara. Here, this is what I wanted to read. The first step in human civilization consists of occupational engagements performed according to the scriptural injunctions. The higher intelligence of human beings should be trained to understand Dharma. In human society, there are various religious conceptions characterized as Hindu, Christian, Hebrew, Mohammedan, Buddhist, and so on, for without religion, human society is no better than animal society. As stated above, religion is meant for emancipation, not for getting bread. Sometimes human society manufactures a system of so-called religion aimed at material advancement, but that is far from the purpose of true religion. Unfortunately, people accept religion for material prosperity because of atyahara, excessive desire for such prosperity. True religion, however, instructs people to be satisfied with the bare necessities of life while cultivating Krishna consciousness. Even though we require economic development, true religion allows it only for supplying the bare necessities of material existence. Jivasya tatva jigyasa, the real purpose of life is to inquire about the absolute truth. So, and then Prabhupada said generally capitalist, communist, it just becomes the same thing. Are there any questions so far? Mangalarti?
Father, I do have a question.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if I should say this.
Say it.
I often have questions that arise lately in studying the Nectar of Instruction.
Yeah.
And how to understand the principle and apply it to a grihastha's life. Because I also understand that renunciation done incorrectly can then cause pain to those who Krishna has placed in my care.
Right.
And that in and of itself is an act not of compassion but of cruelty. So when I hear the words of Srila Rupa Goswami, I often wonder, I don't know if this is offensive to say, I hope I'm saying it in a...
Very clear.
What would Bhaktivinoda Thakur say? What, and I know that it's not proper to step over Srila Prabhupada's instructions. You have Bhakti Loka.
Yeah.
Is that right there?
No, actually, it's really good. Let's see what he says. No, it's actually interesting. No, what he says is very interesting. I am a sannyasi, but I try to give a little something there. I gave the example of that lady on the west side. You know, I know. It's always, this is very important. It's always a question of application of the principles. Right. And I can understand your concern. I can understand your concern in terms of the history of Krishna consciousness sometimes, where people artificially renounced things, then became frustrated. Things that perhaps they needed, like their own home or an income. I think it all comes down to sincerity. it all comes down to sincerity. We have different needs, and we have to really figure it out for ourselves to a certain degree. I even discussed that, last week, where it says udarapasta, we have to control the urge of, the genitals and so many things. And I tried to explain also that... we do things, that's the other verse, Kamesan and Jepi, we do things to become peaceful in Krishna consciousness, right? So then one of the things a person does is they get married, and then it entails certain, in that marriage, there are certain things that are required, like natural affection and affection for children and so many things. So it becomes part of that. But I also told the story of how you can get carried away with yukta vairagya. Yeah, watch, I need to tell time, Rolex,
Whereas for Mercedes in her circle, wearing a Rolex might have been appropriate.
It may have been, and yeah, maybe.
Maybe not a Rolex.
Well, no, the point is valid. The point is valid. It's an application, If we deny our needs, it causes frustration and anger. And if we indulge in them too much, we increase our attachments in this world. So they're prescribed duties. Prescribed duties mean that according to your condition, you get a particular prescription. Where activities are regulated. So we do need certain things. It can get real. I remember one time, it was in the Brooklyn Temple, right? And people needed exercise, right? So on Sunday morning, with Lakshmi Nisringa and some of the people there, they would go out and play basketball, right? Outside their little basketball court, but one sannyasi came and gave a heavy class, And one guy was just shaking. He thought, he was breaking the regulative principles. Because, it takes intelligence, right? And one of the principles we're going to discuss today is called Niyama Agraha. And it's a word in Sanskrit that's divided in two. And It has two meanings: too much affection for the rules and too little affection for the rules. So both are impediments in devotional service, you know. And both are impediments. So it's a good. Any other question? But I don't want to cut too much slack because people take advantage.
They do.
Okay.
I do.
Okay. Any other questions? Gail, yeah.
In the verse.
Yeah.
I don't know if you plan to go into this or not, but I just wanted you to tease apart these two things that sound very similar to me. One is the two of the six things that we shouldn't do.
Yeah.
One is over-endeavoring for a mundane thing.
Yeah.
That are very difficult to obtain.
Yeah.
And the other one is being greedy for mundane achievements.
Yeah. It what? You want the difference?
Yep.
Okay. Which book are you reading?
Our book.
So what? No, it says, over-endeavoring for mundane things. And the last one?
Yes.
Greedy for mundane. Okay, let me get to that and we'll discuss it, okay? We'll discuss that at the end. They're all connected. They're all connected in a way. Okay, let's go on. Next verse and then the... So this is a principle from Isha Upanishads, a societal principle. It says everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside for his quota. And one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So again, different people obviously have different quotas, right? In everything. But that's the principle. So the question is, I would ask, of simple living, high thinking, what would society look like today if people followed this principle? What would you look like today if you followed this principle? What would your family look like today if you followed this principle? If you actually had that consciousness, really I have a quota, and what is it? Scary, isn't it? I told you this class was going to be heavy, but no, it's not heavy. Okay, I don't know. So I tried to get heavier the second week. So, and I'll just read. It's just interesting what Prabhupada said on this page. Anyway, again, I'll read. The wealth of the world should be used for the welfare of all living entities. If you take more than your quota, you're taking someone else's. And different people have different quotas. You know, people are born into different families, different social situations, whatever. For that is the plan of material nature. Everyone has a right to live by utilizing wealth of the Lord. When people learn the art of scientifically utilizing the Lord's property, they will no longer encroach upon another person's rights. Then an ideal society can be formed. The basic principle for such a spiritual society is quoted in the first verse of the Sri Upanishads. Krishna conscious devotees know very well that this material world is designed by the complete arrangement of the Lord to fulfill all the necessities of life for all living beings without their having to encroach upon the life or rights of another. This complete arrangement affords the proper quota of wealth for everyone according to his real needs and thus everyone may live peacefully according to the principle of plain living and high thinking. Unfortunately, materialists who have neither faith in the plan of God nor aspirations for higher spiritual development misuse their God-given intelligence only to augment their material possessions. They devise many systems, such as capitalism and materialistic communism, to advance their material position. They are not interested in the laws of God or a higher goal. Always anxious to fulfill their unlimited desires for sense gratification, they are conspicuous by their ability to exploit their fellow human beings. I should run for political office here. They actually, at one time, the devotees did have a political party. Because there was one person, his name was William Oglethorpe, or Balavanta. And the Oglethorpe family were the people that settled Georgia. He was from Georgia. So he started a party. It was called In God We Trust Party. Somehow that went on for a while. But it's just, it's so connected, right? So I guess it's the same principle that you can't just blame others. You have to look at yourself. Believe me, I'm also challenged. You know, when you read Shastra like this, I have to look at myself. No one can accuse me about my car, though. 1998, Toyota Corolla with only 3 hubcaps. So no one can accuse me of that. What? What? 98 is how many years old?
18.
What?
18.
It's 18 years old. Okay. What? Okay. You know, I feel like a total failure. I'm trying to heavy one everyone out with the philosophy, and they're just joking. Okay, let's go on. We'll go to the next one. Next one, we'll have time at the end. We'll discuss this, because there's some statements that are made that you really have to go in deeper to understand. Crippled-minded persons always engage in satisfying their senses, sometimes expand their activities in order to do good for others through some ism, like nationalism, humanitarianism, or altruism. We'll discuss that later. The point is you have to help people. The objective has to be the soul. Even if you want to help people materially, it has to be the soul. But we'll discuss that. If we have time, we'll go back to that, okay? Now, this is prayas. This is the second one, unnecessary endeavor. So once you have atyahara, when your objective is to collect, then you endeavor in so many, your endeavors are in so many different ways. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Mangalartik, if prayas is not given up, devotion will never arise. He is a little bit more liberal in certain things. But the concept, over-endeavor, where do you put, in spiritual life, objective is everything. If you have the right objective, I wish I can read, there's something else by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If you have the right objective, then, you know, wherever you are is fine, as long as you're moving towards it. It's really the objective. Yeah, it's the objective. So it's an interesting thing. It says in the constitutional state, when you realize the soul, there's no prayas, there's no unnecessary endeavor. Everything is love. When you're in your constitutional state, you realize the soul, everything is love. But in the conditioned state, not everything is love. And we're in the conditioned state. So we have to endeavor four things to support our devotional service, And as Mangal Artik mentioned, we have to maintain the family. We have to send them to certain schools. The children have certain needs. There's a lot of endeavors. What Prabhupada would say also is the kind of society we live in is not so conducive for Krishna consciousness because it increases the endeavor. And what Prabhupada really wanted, he wanted to create self-sustainable communities so that people could live simple and not have that high level of endeavor. But can I tell you something? Prabhupada tried to institute it in America and it failed. And a friend of mine who's an absolute genius, when he came to Krishna consciousness in 1969, he was in the university and they had to create a separate major for him, psycholinguistics. And he studied, Prabhupada told him to start the Kisan movement, the farm movement. I remember one time he went to Boston, he read every book on alternative economics, modern economics. The guy was a genius. And he said the reason why the farm communities failed with Americans is because they're conditioned to a false standard of opulence. The real opulence is family, community, worship of God, organic food, healthy air, right? But we go down to the farm, and what happens? This is what Prabhupada said. If people are advised not to collect too many goods, eat too much, or work unnecessary to possess artificial amenities, they are advised to return to a primitive way of life. Generally, people do not like to accept plain living, but this is their unfortunate condition. It's really a trade-off. These are very, very heavy things on the mind. That's what Shastra means. You know, how we live and I'm who's in New Jersey? I said that like a real New Jersey guy too, right? Okay. What's the name of that yoga studio?
Which one?
That I'm giving the program on the 17th? Ohana. But that's all the way down, right? That's in Tom's room. Near, okay. But I'm going to give a lecture on ancient teachings, modern life. What? On the 17th. Kishori, this is Mina. You give her the information, okay? You can also give her the information to the programs we do. Gopa, you give the information to the programs at your house. We do great programs in Jersey. And you know what they're famous for? Lakshmi comes to the programs, too. He says they're the best programs. They're famous for their cooking. The men are great cooks. Okay. But, the first thing I think a person has to look at is, can I have a more natural life, you know, a better quality of life? I once gave a lecture in, I got all the time and I'm figuring out how to do all this, but I gave a lecture. I didn't know when I was going to the lecture who the people would be, but they turned out to be evangelical Christians. I remember riding there in the car with someone I met from India, said, you have to meet my parents. Rati was with me at that time. And we're about, I wrote an article about this too. And we're about 30 minutes from the house, and the girl who I met in India said, oh my God, I know my parents are going to like this. They're evangelical Christians. I don't go, right now you tell me. But I remember when I gave the lecture and the people were sitting there, I wrote on my website, I really liked that article I wrote about. I forgot what I called the article on my website. I wrote an article about this because it was so amazing. But when I spoke to them, these people had a lot of integrity. And one point I made is that Prabhupada didn't separate economics from spiritual life. And therefore, the last thing he was doing was actually, the last thing he was doing, he was trying to go to Gita Nagari to teach people how to live off the land or live in a sustainable way. Because you, and a guy, a big guy with beard, 300 pounds and overalls in the back went like this, "Amen, brother." So then I knew that my lecture was kind of touching people. But, okay, this is, so the endeavor, that energy that we have, right, that energy we have for so many useless things, when you have the right, when you don't have the right objective. And here, the commentary from Bhaktivinoda Thakur is, prayas, or endeavor for fame, is the worst thing. To endeavor for reputation and fame. Useless endeavor. I guess the principle is when you endeavor for anything that's not connected to devotional service, including your needs. This was just a great comment from this book. Next, Rati. It was such a great comment from this book. Just meditate on this. This is so powerful. To make oneself big at the cost of others is a concocted illusory line. Everyone is struggling to become big, but that is an illusion. That big is not really big. Real bigness is on the other side. To become big is easy. I am a big man. I have something to be proud of. But to accept that we are nothing in the face of the absolute, to accept this creed in its true color, is very difficult. The endeavor to be a servant. And the endeavor to be a servant is something that you can do right now. While being a big man, you may or may not get it according to your karma. But to actually be a servant and serve humbly, you can do it right now. Okay, let's go on. So, example of unwanted things. By God's arrangement, there is sufficient scope for the production of milk and grains for human beings all over the world. But instead of using their higher intelligence to cultivate God consciousness, so-called intelligent men misuse their intelligence to produce unnecessary and wanted things. Thus, factories, slaughterhouses, brothels, and liquor shops are off. So many endeavors that are useless. So many. Does anybody have a little bit guilt that there's so little integrity in their life? Everything that they buy and eat and do, they don't produce anything of it? Yeah. But, you know, it was so conditioned. We're so conditioned. I stayed in Gita Nagari. I used to go every year. And I could stay there peacefully because it was 3 hours from New York. Jamuna, who, if her biography's out, she is the most renowned devotee in the movement. Jamuna Devi, practically the most respected for her depth of devotion. And at a particular time, she traveled all over the world where she would settle to execute her Krishna consciousness. And she went to an ISKCON farm called Sharanagati in Vancouver that was off the grid. And where everyone very cheaply can get 5 acres of land. And she built a straw bale house. And it just became such a community when she was there, and she would be always chanting and hearing it and singing the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and doing kirtans. And, you know, so there is a level of advancement, but we're not convinced yet that the real happiness is in the soul. We're really still thinking the real happiness is in the world. And in a simple life and a proper community, the world happiness is the essential needs are more likely to be provided than in the modern world, too. So, let me ask you something. Would we have a better world without internet and computers? Would we have a better world? Most people are shaking their heads, yes. Will we have a better world? I remember when I came back to India and I wasn't so, I'm always about 5 years behind technology. You know, by the time I got a phone, then by the time I got an iPhone, by the time I got a computer, I was always like behind. And then finally, I couldn't even, I could, people wouldn't communicate with me unless I text. No one would answer phones. So I was forced to get that too. And I remember I'd sit in class and I'd watch in kirtans. We have these kirtans and everyone was, it was just amazing. And that, let's go on. Okay, wait, let me see if I got it. No. Okay, yeah. True happiness comes from contentment, and whatever one has, not with thinking that one will be happy when one gets all his desires. This is from Yoga Sutras. Even if there is some lack, says Shankar, one thinks it is enough. Or as Harinandananda puts it, to avoid injury from thorns, one only has to wear one pair of shoes. One doesn't have to cover the whole earth with leather. So this kind of simplicity. And then it's enough. I'm happy. Even if I'm happy with whatever I get. I remember that principle. You know, I was in Vrindavan for so many years and I was working in an institution and then all of a sudden I wasn't working and I have a place to stay in Vrindavan. And then my mind would go, I have to buy a place in the MVT, that's the exclusive. I have to get this place. I have to get, my mind was going, I need to get, and then I just went, no. No, I'm a monk. You know, whatever Krishna provides, I'll take. Then at a particular time, one very saintly person, a very saintly lady in Vrindavan, just so amazing how advanced she is in Krishna consciousness. She saw me, she said, no, you should have at least, you know, a simple place for your spiritual practices. And then I desired it, and 6 months later, someone gave me a very simple place. But that consciousness, whatever, it's enough. It's just like working. You know, you work 9 to 5, and what you get, it's enough. And live within your means. Rather than get a second job and this and that, it's enough. That principle makes you happier than always endeavoring for everything you want. And just think, the whole modern civilization, I have one disciple, I think she studied advertising. She told me how insidious it is. The subliminal messages, how they're manipulating you to just increase your desires. That's why it says in the Bhagavatam, when the sages see this whole world, they go, Priyenalpa, Yasha, Shubha, Kalabasmin, Yuge, Jana, Manda, Sumanda, Mata. They say that when they see this whole world, they just, they're looking. It was 5,000 years ago. They're looking today. They see it surcharged with opposition. Because everything is saying, get power to satisfy your ego and you'll be happy. Everything is telling you that. Every sign, every person walking around is convinced about that. Every book, every movie, it's constantly telling you that. And how many people are telling you, no, you'll be happy when you live within your soul. When you're just satisfied within your soul. So you can see why these are the obstacles. And then I mentioned this, but there is struggle, but real struggle. And that's the struggle you're going to face when you hear these things and confront your world with philosophy and with information. That's another struggle. And he makes a very interesting comment. He said, yeah, when you're beginning, no struggle. Yeah, it's all sweet. How are you going? You know? But then when we suck in further, no. But then there's the challenges. You know, that there's an absolute truth, and how do I move towards that, et cetera. Okay, let's go on. I'm going to move fast now to give some time. Now, Prajalpa. Wow. Whew. Look, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, our liberal Mangalarti, you know what he says? For the practicing devotees, to read newspapers is a great loss. Yeah, I just, 99% of cut off news comes anyway. You know, it's just, there's no news actually. I think on Monday I look at it for a half hour, I can't even find any news. So it's prajalpa, intelligent persons never take part in such activities. To abuse the reign of our self-control and allow ourselves to enter into discussions of anything and everything, that is prajalpa. And Prabhupada says, those outside of the Krishna conscious movement are interested in reading heaps of newspapers, magazines, and novels, solving crossword puzzles, and doing so many nonsensical things. Not connected to the soul. Speech, the Yoga Sutra said, our speech should not be deceitful. It should not be misleading. It should not be void of value. It should not be harmful. It should be beneficial. So, and I have a poem to share with you, okay? And this was a poem written by Madan Oppenheimer, who gives the, what is it called? Brave New Gita, every 2 weeks with Kasturba. So he wrote a poem on internet using the poem, Enter Not. Okay? So you want to hear the poem?
Yes.
Dot communists everywhere. Invasion on a grand scale. Too much information, too quick. Check your head when you check your email. They come disguised as friends and well-wishers. You never had less time to think. This fruit of man's progress looks good on the surface, but inside it's toxic and stinks. If I give in, and I hope that I don't, I'll log on to forgiveme.com. But until then, you'll find me on the run from the fallout of dot-commie bombs. We get the idea, right? So that next. Well, before I get to this, well, yeah. Other things, arguments. Arguments are generally 90% based on the ego. A Vaishnava generally doesn't argue. Oh, you defeat me, they sign the paper. If you have to defend something, but generally that tendency, so many things. Debates, useless talk, fault finding, speaking falsehood, criticizing, so many things is called prajalpa. And this is the worst thing. Idle talk usually leads to fault finding. Prajalpa generally, this is from, becomes paradosha nusadana, finding fault with others. That is generally the subject matter of idle talks. And again, nothing ruins your bhakti worse than sadhu ninda when you criticize others, especially those who are dedicating their lives to purifying their hearts. Very, wow, we got 45 minutes, okay? You're still with me?
Yeah.
It's 2.5 hours is a lot. That's why I'm standing today. I just felt I needed, in this room with less air, I needed to give more energy. Conclusion, all prajapa that unfavorable to Krishna's service, you have to give up, that is averse to devotional service. So that would be the test of the om. Okay? This week, change it when there's idle talk. All right? See if anybody can keep it on for an hour. We'll try that.
Okay.
But you understand, you know, the goal of life is to excavate the soul. to actually come in contact with the soul and experience pure love. And sitting here means you've come into a process where you are now on the path to some degree or another. And now this is saying, because it's a yogic process, right? This is the things you need to avoid. These are the things you need to do. Then one verse, and this is how you relate with others. All these things. So obviously they're challenging because the truth doesn't conform to our desires. And that is really tough. But it's so good to hear it. Because just following our desires without being guided by truth, it just leads to death. That's all. It leads to a horrible experience at the end. Okay? There's a little hell, brimstone, and fire should be put in there. Isn't this so true? Isn't it? Once the idle talk goes, it goes. And let me see. Okay, did I get the best remedy for idle talk? We request to talk about the Supreme Lord, and by that process, all undesirable ability within us may vanish. Speak always and only about Krishna. Speaking means reproducing. When we speak something, we cannot but be fully attentive. We cannot speak nonsense. When we speak, we must be fully attentive. It is difficult to have concentration within, so preaching or speaking forcefully makes us concentrate on a particular call. It cannot be nonsense to the public. I must be alert when I'm speaking. So when you actually speak things that have meaning, it really, really controls the mind. Really, really controls the mind. And, I thought of some advanced devotees who have this principle of talking on a very, on a very focused way. I have this friend, I always quote him, Borijan Prabhu. And, there's so much, even in Krishna, there's so much joking, there's so much love, affection, but it's just when your objective is there, all these things seem to become more purified. It's not like a dull life. But I remember whenever I'd come into his room, he would always have a question that made me think. So I remember one day I walked into his room, and he asked me, I'll ask you, what is your taste in Krishna consciousness? And he said, the reason he asked that, he said, because your taste in Krishna consciousness is like your door to the spiritual world. And that's what's so beautiful about Krishna consciousness. Just follow your taste. Follow your taste. What is your taste? And different people have different tastes. Gail likes to chant japa. Gail loves to hear Krishna Katha. I don't think she listens to less than 4 or 5 classes a week ever. I don't think you follow your taste, really. You follow your taste. And different people have different tastes. Some people, it's just Vrindavan. Borijan said, just walking around Vrindavan is their taste. Somebody, it's kirtan, it's singing. It's so beautiful. But the thing about it, when he asked me that, it's just, there's ways to, bring discussions to a, connected to the soul, and it's very, very healthy. And there's a verse, satatam kirtayanto mam, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me. These great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. I also thought one time, it was like 25 years ago, I was in some airport with Radhanath Swami, and we were sitting and he just said, please read the Bhagavad Gita. You know, it's just that when people have very high consciousness and objectives. But within the realm, there's actually Krishna conscious because it's loving exchange. It's not dull or anything. But
what was your taste?
What? What's that?
What was the answer to you?
My taste? Yeah. Japa, actually. It really is. That's really my taste. My taste is meditation. That's my taste. Among other things, telling jokes in Krishna consciousness. there's many things you can do, right? Anybody else like to share their taste?
Kirtan.
What? Kirtan? Kirtan, that's good. Yeah?
Serving the deities,
that's nice. Wonderful. Making garlands, serving the deities, it's great.
Eating prasadam.
That's great. Yeah, if you do it with faith, you can be purified. If I was an astrologer, I'd really like to see what the planetary influence is today, or maybe it's just the room is so inspiring or something, or because I'm walking around, I feel like I'm evangelical preacher, and it gets a certain mood in me. Okay, one more. Okay, I'm going to go fast now. Content is more important than style. Very important. In terms of talking, it's not the style, it's the content. One of my godbrothers said that this verse in the Bhagavatam predicted the appearance of Prabhupada. Because what it says is, Tadvag Visargo. It's talking about talks about Krishna. It says, this is a different creation. Janatagna Viplavo. It will cause a revolution in the people, in sinful people. Yasmin Prati Shlokam Abad Avat Yapi. Even though each and every verse will be perfectly composed. So he made, because Prabhupada translated the Bhagavatam in English, it was his second language, there were many grammatical mistakes. So he said, this actually predicted Prabhupada. But it's interesting, content more important than style. We'll go on, we're going to just go quickly, because I... Niyama Agraha, well actually, Rati, it's wrong, it should be one word, but, okay. And that one word, Niyama Agraha, with long A, by Sanskrit rule, Sunday, it means you can divide it. It can be the Niyama Agraha or Niyama Agraha, because short A and short A make long A, and short A and short A make long A, and short A and long A make long A. So even if you have the word Niyama Agraha, you look in your book, it can either mean Niyama Agraha or Niyama Agraha. And Niyama Agraha means too much affection, and Niyama means rules, right? Like Yam Niyam, right? Too little or too much affection for the rules. So it's interesting because I had many notes on this, but I'll explain. There's different degrees of faith and there's different levels of practice in Krishna consciousness. And as you advance, there are certain rules and certain practices and certain things for one level that when you go to another level, it becomes an anchor. I'll give you an example. You know, Prabhupada, he had all the devotees go to the morning program, but he just stood in his room and wrote and chanted, etc. You know, so he didn't follow the same thing. So you see that tendency too much. I had both these tendencies in my life. I can tell you, when I first came, it was too much affection for the rules. I just wouldn't miss any program, morning, evening, every single program. And then, you know, I remember one day I wanted to go to the morning Bhagavatam class, and they said, "Can you wash pots?" I freaked out. You know, I wanted to go to the class. I freaked out, literally. I remember, I hid behind the Vyasa-san. I was so upset. How can they stop me from hearing class? But, you know, you become attached to rules. And there's an advanced stage called Raganuga Bhakti, where the inspiration for your service, the inspiration is not that you should do it, but you like to do it. And the inspiration is your heart, and it's so strong. And when you're on that level, you can't be guided by have to do this, have to do this. You're guided by your heart. And there's one rule in Krishna consciousness that guides all other rules. We mentioned that in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The rule is to think of Krishna and never forget Krishna. And that rule covers all other rules. So that's the objective, but sometimes we'll follow a rule that doesn't serve that. I'll give you one example. It's just a small example, but you know, the Bhakti Center, the history of the Bhakti Center is that people from ISKCON somehow got this place, but it was another organization that wasn't ISKCON. So it hasn't been legally transferred to ISKCON, right? But ISKCON has certain rules for initiation, right? There's certain like rules. So people that came here, somehow they couldn't get initiated. There was some struggle because there was a rule, an institutional rule. So I actually wrote a letter. I said, this is too much affection for the rule. You know, people are suffering, they're waiting. And you know, it wasn't me, but then they said, no, we've already passed that, you know, people here can get initiated. But that kind of consciousness, that you're more attached, you know, to the form of something than the purpose for which it is done. And the other one is you have too little affection for the rule. you know, knock it off, you know, what is that? Satya Hari, can you think of anything of too much affection for a rule? Maybe think about it during the class if you can share. But you kind of get the idea. It's a tendency within us that will be bad for bhakti. We become too rigid on something without seeing the purpose of it. And the purpose is to think of Krishna. And therefore, even on a high platform, what it says is, you know, because on a high platform, you just want to meditate on Krishna. You're not doing something. You're not going to something because, you know, I'm going to this program because if I attend this program, it follows the rule and I make advancement. And therefore, your objective is not the absorption in the program, but completing it. Or you have rounds, you chant 16 rounds. You know, if I chant my rounds, if I finish those rounds, those that make that vow, then the last beat I make the advancement, not the absorption in it. So there's a practice, and it says that, you know, at a particular level, we should start developing an attraction spontaneously for Krishna, right? And that should be our guiding light and things we do. We're meditating on Krishna, meditating on Krishna's pastimes. But it says, to the extent that you're not have spontaneous love, you still have to be under the rule of law. Because what happens is, why do we follow rules and why do we make vows? Because if we just leave things to our mind, we won't do anything. In other words, we say, okay, you know, I'm just spontaneously attracted to Krishna. I'm not going to come to the morning program here. I don't need the Mangal Artik or this. I'll just be in my room chanting. And this is how you'll chant. That's how you'll chant, because that's what's in your heart. But no, you need to be guided by the rule. But there's, you know, so this even is Ajata Ruchi Raganuga Bhakti. Before that you're completely pure, you can still spontaneously meditate on Krishna, but to the extent that you're not spontaneous, we have to be guided by discipline and rules and vows and things like that. But the goal is love. The goal is love. So it's something like that, and there's so many things I conditioned souls are eligible to attain a very exalted position from a very low position. These positions, there are many other positions. According to degree of your faith, each level has different rules. As one leaves behind one level and progresses to the next, he should honor the rules of the later and leave aside the former. Those who do not give it up, the rule, are like chains that do not allow him to proceed to the next level. But the main rule, savai punso paro dharma, what's the highest dharma? What brings you closer to God is the highest dharma. And if a rule is not helping you come closer to God, you may not be attached to that particular rule. But at the same sense, niyama agraha, too little affection for the rules. And that's probably more our problem. So we have to do that. Okay, I'm moving along. This next one, Janasangha. It's, I think, this particular one. This particular one we will probably discuss next week more, because one of the most important principles is a satsang tyag, a Vaishnava char of a Vaishnava, is he's careful with his association, because who you associate with, you get their ideals. And it doesn't mean it doesn't mean so much you don't deal with people, but it really means where the intimate heart gets exchanged. There's a transference of feelings. We have to be very practical in so many ways. I know we have very close relations. Not all of them have the same ideals as we. So we always just have to understand what are the principles involved. And I can say very frankly that the way people generally advance in spiritual life is by the degree that their community becomes the people that have their ideals. It just somehow or other. And I think one of the beautiful things of the Bhakti Center is that we created such a open, non-judgmental community. You know, people can come and take what they want. We don't have a conversion objective as you walk in the door. That people can come in as they want and feel comfortable and develop friendships. And then I think what happens is, after a while, this becomes your community. And the more your community becomes of those spiritual people, the more you advance in spiritual life. That's actually the principle of it. And you'll... I'm reading a book, a novel, Jiva Dharma, about people coming to Krishna consciousness after the time of Lord Chaitanya. And there's one family who's very miserly, and they never invite devotees over to their home and everything. And then when they get older, they go on pilgrimage, and their children, you know, steal all their money and tell them not to come back. And, you know, the principle was, is because their children didn't get that association, that's what they became. And I just see the principle and how it works. When we, you know, when you created the, you know, when the Hare Krishna centers, maybe Niyama Agraha, maybe some of them had too much attention for the rules. And when people would come in, they would be too much confronted, you know, and it wasn't a comfortable place to feel it out and see if this is your community, then people wouldn't change because they'd have a chance to be part of that community. And so very wonderful thing, developing friendships, and your friendships become more and more spiritual people. So, and that's why Prabhupada established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And the last one, which Gail wanted an answer, let's see, it's if I can give the difference. And this is lolyam, and it means greed. This is, if the other one is where you endeavor. And this is just describing where a weakness of heart that you have so many different attractions. And go on, Rati. This is a verse describing this. Those are materially engrossed, being blind. This is the kind of verse, Mangalarti, that may confuse people. Okay? Those who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of the ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society. O Emperor, the life of such an envious household is passed either at night in sleeping or in sex indulgence, in daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. It means your only objectives are material, that's all. And that's where your greed is, and that's where your desires are. That's what you want.
But it seems like the Lolians refers to the endeavor's name, or what's in your heart?
What's in your heart?
Okay, so then the other one, prior,
is the endeavor.
Yeah. So one is like on the external.
Yeah, I think more like that. Yeah. So what we're going to do now, and I told you with this class also, I've realistically understood that I can't cover every point. I can't go over every single analogy. And I really, my objective here is to give you the essence of the subject, and you have the materials. So if you want to learn all those things, you can. So next week will be the third verse, which will discuss the things that we do that enhance devotion. And right now, we'll do the same thing as take out your pen and pencil. Don't break up into groups of more than three, two or three people. And I want you to just write, free write, what point struck you in the class. And then we will... Hey, nice to see you. How old are you now?
I'm 15.
What?
15.
Only 15? Okay. Okay, free writing. I already told you how to do it. It means just write what struck you the most in the class, whatever you remember that really hit you, and just keep the pen moving. That's all you do. And even if you don't know what to write, the pen has to move by saying, I don't know what to write. But what struck you, you should write. Okay, just underline one sentence. Okay, and turn to your neighbor and then share and explain why you like that particular sentence. You want to come? You'll. Their three is here. Okay. You and Julie. Okay, hi. Hi, Krishna. Hi, Bo. Hi, Bo. Can I have your attention? Okay, good. One thing that I realize is that there's a lot of fine lines in these points that have to be discussed further. So please, if you have any questions, either write them down, we can bring them next class, and we can have some time to discuss them. And, so you get a really kind of a really good balanced understanding of these various things. You know, a very sensitive point is, not associating with worldly people and what that actually means. So I want to discuss that probably extensively next week. What the actual principle is, and what it actually means, because it can make someone really cold-hearted and so all these things we'll discuss, and so the bands with the idol talk, at least try for one day.
I would definition of idle talk. Anything
that's not connected directly or indirectly to the soul.
Okay.
And indirectly is a very broad thing. Okay. But like, hey, look, as soon as you turn on the internet, you're finished. You got to put it to the other side, right? It's just like...
Put it on the computer.
Okay. Give class tomorrow. If anyone here in the Bhakti Center at 11 o'clock, I'm going to give class. And I'm going to give next Tuesday. We really had a nice crowd last Tuesday. That was really great. We're discussing Krishna's pastimes. And what's that date, Bryn, for our...
April 10th, next Sunday.
Is it next Sunday? Really? Okay. Okay, next Sunday at, what time is it? 4:30. 4:30 at Yoga Maya in Chelsea. We have a program. We do it a few times a year called Sadhu Sunday, where we have a nice kirtan and Antana Chuta. I'm going to speak some hopefully relevant message, and the people in New Jersey are going to bring their famous prasad.
The men.
So, what? The men. Okay. So, look it up on the Yoga Maya website, but it's really, we have like a traditional Sunday feast kind of at Yoga Maya, so that'll be fun. I really think a lot of these points have to be discussed further. So if you have any question about their application, you know, and what the principle is, then write the question down, please. Even right now, if you have any question, write it down and bring it next week. But we have 4 more minutes. Anybody have a question? Write it down if it's not clear. Okay, before you go.
All right, you want me to give you my overzealousness for the rules thing?
Yeah. Okay, last thing. Listen to some.
Traditionally, you're supposed to get up in the Brahma Muhurta before the sun comes up and do your sadhana.
Yeah.
And so some people are very like hard and fast about it. That's the only time you can really do it. That's the best time to do
it. Yeah.
But some of us, we get stuck working nighttime. You know what I mean? So we work right through the Brahma Muhurta and get out of work at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So those people would have a tendency to say, ha-ha, you can't do your sadhana at all because you missed the magic hour. Right, rather than you making the adjustments for time, place, and circumstance and saying, I'm just going to do it when I get up.
I'll give you just another example. Madhavatiti Bhakati Janati, that the days of Lord Hari, like Ekadasi and Janmashtami, give birth to devotion. So the traditional thing is to fast on those days. And when you fast on those days, you decrease your bodily needs, and you have more focus and attention. But if your body was such that by fasting it created more sleep and more sickness, but I am going to fast on Ekadasi because it's one of the rules. So that would be niyama agraha, too much affection for the rules because it wasn't serving your purpose. But let's end right now. I think 2.5 hours is a lot of time to digest spiritual subject matters and to speak it. Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.